Mr. Charlie Chia Fook in Reel 11.
Yeah, of course. The five of them were detained by the Japanese soldiers. They passed the night in the guardhouse. When early next morning, they sent Japanese soldiers and reported to the chief. Of course, the Japanese civilian chief, he was a pretty ferocious guy. He was slightly shorter than me, maybe slightly better built, but he was a bundle of energy, you know, very energetic, running around. So, of course, when he heard it, he was very mad. He went to the military camp. He identified these five chaps and got their release. You see, the Japanese military camp was not far from our quarters. When they came back, he gave all five of them a bollocking. You see, he said that next time, if you're caught again, I'll leave you there. I won't come. So we were all warned not to stray. There was nobody on the island. So for first few days, we spent our time exploring the interior. There's practically nobody. You see, maybe a few people staying right inside. So we left it at that. After a few days, we had our meals together with the Japanese. Altogether, there were a total of four Japanese civilians. And we had our meals together. And three meals, in the morning, rice, afternoon rice, dinner also rice. But of course, we had to be wary and limit ourselves, you see, much as we would like to. And after a few days, there was 1, 2, 3, 4 of us, you know, myself, Marvin, another, Patrick, Wellington. Yeah, I think there were four of us, together with some Indian laborers and some of these skilled workmen. We were asked to follow the chief, Japanese civilian chief. Therein, we boarded a launch, and we were brought down to Brunei, not very far away from Brunei itself. And at the time, the chief and another Japanese, whom I presume to be the accountant, they occupied a single-story bungalow outside the town area, but not far away. Whilst we occupied two shop houses in the town, so there we were. Next day, from Brunei town, we went across to an island. Outside the Brunei town, on the river, you had what was known as the Ai Kampong. These Malay huts on stilts, and not far away there was a, you can't call that an island, you see. And there in the company had its brick making shed. There one Japanese also no the three Japanese came along together down to Brunei, you see. The Japanese who recruited us in Singapore stayed behind together with the other workmen. And one Japanese together with us, those that came down to Brunei, we went across to the island to start the brick making. And that Japanese was left in charge of the brick making. He was quite a nice chap. He could speak a smattering of English. But then we had this snowball in the group. So this snowball used to entertain him, you see? And that was mainly to pinch his cigarettes, you see, because cigarettes down there was ration. So he could, he would try to use his best to scrounge one or two cigarettes every evening after dinner. Every evening after dinner, we'd sit out on the veranda there, and he would joke with this Japanese chap. And when he got him into a nice mood, then he blutched a cigarette from him. You see? But at that time, I was not really, what you say, an addict to this cigarette yet, you see. So it did not matter if I did not smoke. So therein, every morning, every day, the Japanese chief came across to the island. Of course, he tolerated no idling. Right? There was no such thing as supervisors. Everyone was a workman. So we soon learned. Right? If you did not put your shoulders to it, he just simply barked at you and threatened you. So whether we liked it or not, we also learned how to, supposed to learn how to make bricks. See?
When you all went there, the place that you stay in, the huts and the one-story buildings, that was your residence for the period that you were in Borneo?
For us only. Mm. And I would say for every one of us, mm, until we moved from there. You see?
So that was a temporary stop?
That was a temporary stop.
So when you were asked to go to the make bricks, you had to stay on that island?
We stayed on that island.
Was there any huts?
There was a accommodation there. You see, the this Japanese, he had the hut on his own, whilst there was another hut for the laborers, you see.
So
I can't recollect how we got our meals, you see. Who did the cooking or whatever it is. That part of it is blank, you see.
So the big group of...
It was only a small group.
So the big group was divided into various small groups to work?
Yeah. Well, we had some Chinese and I would say about 25-30% of the workforce were brought down to Brunei, you see.
What happened to the rest?
The rest stayed behind, together with the Japanese who did the recruitment in Singapore.
Did you know what they were
I did not. After I left there, I did not have any opportunity to go back at all.
So that...
I'm wrong there. I did go back a couple of times. I can't recollect for what purpose it was. Because I do remember that I got pretty familiar with the route, you see, how to get back from Brunei to Morotai, you see, where I went down to the wharf. I took the launch, leaving for Morotai, you see.
So the group which came to Brunei were all working at the brick making?
No.
The bricks?
Half dozen or so went to operate the sawmill. It had a long shed built and another smaller shed as quarters.
So you...
It would appear that the more or less a foundation of the sawmill operations were already there. Because only this half dozen Indian workmen went to the sawmill site, whilst the rest went across to the island. And only another Indian who could speak Japanese went with the big chief.
So throughout your stay there, you were working at the bricks factory?
No, I was at the brick factory for only a very short period, I think a week or maybe slightly more than a week, before I was called back to Brunei. Therein, of course, by that time, we had started the sickness had started, you see. There was sick laborers then. So I was called back to Brunei most probably on the recommendation of the accountant, you see. So I was told I would be looking after the sick, to bring them to the hospital, see the doctor, and all that, you see. And also to draw the rations, where we had to go to the military headquarters at that time, which they called the Butai, you see. Therein we drew the rations, and I also had to draw the daily rations for the two Japanese, the chief and the accountant. Of course, this Indian who could speak Japanese, his name was Nathan. He stayed with the two Japanese, and he did some of the running around for them, you see. Most of the time he followed the Japanese chief. So these were more or less my duties, you see. Every morning, go down, collect the rations, and bring it to the Japanese, you see. They employed a cook. Ah, yes, I must relate a very an incident. Whilst we were in Brunei, from early days, most of the shops had already closed. I was remaining a laundry shop, a former, I would say, call it a coffee shop and restaurant. Coffee shop was, of course, not operating, but there was a big stout Chinese, whom we call Joe, who was operating a char kway teow. And there was a gambling saloon, of course, gambling saloon. And I think these were about plus a few shops at the back. See. All the others had packed up. So whenever lunchtime, when we came back to town from the work site, you see, first place we rushed to after our lunch with the Japanese, the next door, Joe, kway teow, okay? Because with a limited food, we could only take a small bowl, dare not take more, for fear of getting a scolding, okay? So wasn't enough. So kway teow was our savior, you see. And even then he had limited quantities on it. So it was quite all right those early few days, you see. But when I was called back to Brunei again, taken out from the island, the brickworks, they're in okay, collect the rations. Of course, they did not, the two Japanese didn't get much. But whatever they got, you see, of course, if I saw the sufficient to cut a small slice, I cut a small slice for myself, you see. So I didn't do too badly. And after that, I just sent it over. I had an Indian laborer to help me. Of course, he cooked for the sick people, you see. At the same time, also he cooked for me. So I occupied one of the two shop houses. There was a bunk upstairs. I slept in the back room, rear room, you see. And the sick laborers occupied the other shop house, you see. So after the rations, okay, bring them down to the hospital, see to the doctor. Well, of course, the doctor couldn't do much, because by then it was 1944 already. Whatever stocks of medicine he had would be exhausted on your exhaustion.
Was he a Japanese doctor?
No, it was a local citizen. You see, I think it was a Malay.
The sawmill and the brickworks, did you know who were they sending to?
During my short period at brickworks, I never saw these bricks leaving the island. Most probably if they had put it onto these small sampans or whatever it is, they would sink the sampans. They were so heavy, you know, these bricks. Quite about this size, you know. Not the bricks that you see around here. Somewhat about the size of these hollow bricks. So you can see how heavy they are. And all this clay.
So you had no idea where they sent these
no
bricks?
No idea.
To?
All that remained, we put it out to dry. Yeah? Mm. After that, it was stacked.
How did you make these bricks? Were there any Japanese to teach or to supervise?
Yeah, this Japanese. He taught us how to make the bricks. There was someone who churned the mud, and then after that, how to mold it, you see. Just got into the knack of it. Nothing very hard.
So how would you describe your working experiences in those conditions?
Well, we just simply took it, you see. And, well, just couldn't be helped. I mean, if this Japanese chief was not around, of course, everything slackened. The Japanese on the island, he was quite a happy-go-lucky chap, you see. And of course, my snowball and the other Eurasian, snowball, by the way, was named Mahalingam. He died. He died a few years after the liberation, you see. And this Eurasian, Patrick Paolo, they kept this Japanese amused, you see. They kept him entertained, engaging him in jokes and conversation, you see. So we all, if the Japanese chief was not around, we got on pretty well. But when he came the next day, you see, what is the net result of the day's work? And he started swearing, you see. But all the other three Japanese were scared of him. Because throughout the period, I see his relationship with the, only his relationship with the accountant was what you can say cordial. Insofar as these two other Japanese, they were more or less treated like his subordinates. you see. And he was of the rough and tough type. He would have no hesitation in raising his hands.
What about security? Were you all guarded or?
No. We, in Brunei, we could move around freely. The Japanese military was only about 100 yards or so from the shop houses which we occupied, you see. But once we were in Brunei, we befriended a local Chinese, you see. And a few others also. They were all working for the Japanese government. And I understand this Chinese, his name is Kong, you see. He was working at customs. And his father, I think his father or grandfather, was known as the Capitan China, you see. So, we did manage quite well. Of course, there's off and on, he invited us. He had a bungalow also across the island, across Brunei town, quite close by to the brickwork site. So off and on, they all went to his bungalow, you see? And they got on. We got on pretty well, you see. So, just carried on. I did work also some time in the sawmill, you see. Of course, there's no such thing as supervisor. You were only one of the workmen. So you did your part. Well, my part was to roll the logs were floated down the river. And I had to roll them up to the sawmill bench for cutting, you see. So there was no such thing. And I developed ulcer on my left ankle, you see. And the thing got worse. So there were thing got worse. Fortunately, this Indian cook was helpful. So what he advised me to do was to, he got some sulfur, he mixed it with this coconut, and what he advised me to do was to apply it and then lie naked upstairs in the front room, exposing my ulcer to the sunlight, you see. After a short time, I got rid of it. I got better, you see. So I was very fortunate because I've seen my workmen with these ulcers, you see.